installations. This crime, this major crime, this attack which they committed, that is the goal. I'm not analyzing, because on Tuesday afternoon, hours after the operation, there were messages sent by official and unofficial channels, and they say clearly that the aim behind this strike is for you to stop the support of Gaza, to stop fighting in South Lebanon. And if you don't, there'll be more. This was Tuesday afternoon, and then Wednesday, they threatened more. So the aim is clear. The aim is clear. Some people might go further and say that this was an introduction, and hours later there will be a large-scale major military operation. This is up for debate. However, at the very least, what is clear, and this is what we received, and this is what the officials in Lebanon were also informed of, that that is the name of the attack. Anyway, Israel tacitly said, admitted to this, forcing the resistance into submission, making the resistance surrender, stopping the resistance, making the resistance exit this confrontation. There are some Western countries already, for example, the Security Council implementation of 1701, and that's it, will end the war. And Gaza and the people of Gaza and the resistance in Gaza and the people of West Bank and Palestine and all of the confrontation, they'll be left to fend for themselves. So all the sacrifices we made, all the martyrs, all the efforts we pursued, and the confrontations, the bloody confrontations over the course of a year would have all gone to a waste. And this is something we cannot do. So the aim behind this attack, the framework within this which this attack took place, and the aim behind it on Tuesday and Wednesday was to separate between the two fronts and for the Lebanese front to come to a halt. The response, in the name of the martyrs, in the name of the families of the martyrs, in the name of the wounded in the hospitals, in the name of those who lost their eyes and hands, in the name of all those people who are bearing with the difficulties, who are standing firmly, those loyal people, all those who took up the responsibility of carrying out this ethical and human and religious duty in support of Gaza, which is subject to genocide and to mass killings and starvation and thirst and disease and a siege. We say to Netanyahu and Gallant, who was going to be fired, it seems he's going to stay in his position, we say to the enemy's government and the enemy's army and the enemy's society, Lebanon's front will not stop before an end to the aggression on Gaza. We've been saying this for 11 months. Maybe this is a repetition now. However, this comes after these two big attacks, after this number of martyrs and these wounded, after all of this pain. I said clearly, whatever be the sacrifices, whatever be the possibilities, the repercussions, whatever be the horizon towards which the region is headed, the resistance in Lebanon will not stop supporting and standing with the people of Gaza and the West Bank and the oppressed people in that holy land. That is the first part of a response, thwarting the goals. The only thing they would have done was to kill and wound and to conduct their brutality. But have they achieved the goal? No. The same applies in Gaza. They kill, they carry out genocide, but for 11 months they haven't achieved one goal, not one goal of the declared goals of the war. Of course, within the framework of this goal, there is also a tacit goal, which serves that same goal, was to strike the supporters. And there is a third, which is to strike the infrastructure. And the second goal, which is to attack the supporters. Where did the explosions take place? Mainly southern Beirut, the Biqa, and south. That's only natural because Hezbollah's people and Hezbollah's organization, some also took place in the north and in the Jbeil Qasirwan region. By carrying out this large-scale explosion, they wanted to target these supporters, to make them exhausted, to force them into submission, to make them cry out and say to the resistance and to the leadership of the resistance, enough, like some people are trying to do. Some who don't belong to the supporters of the resistance, enough, we've done what is required. That goal has also been thwarted. It was thwarted on Tuesday and Wednesday. When you hear the wounded in the hospitals, those who are still in the hospitals or those who left the hospital, and the whole world heard them and saw their high morale, and I heard them on TV, their high morale, their great endurance, their will, their determination to return to the battlefield, to return to the front lines, to return to the fight, to insist on this task and this responsibility. This is also a response to the enemy, and it thwarts the enemy's objective. Anyone who listens to the martyrs of the, to the families of the martyrs and the wounded, their steadfastness, their determination, their endurance, their determination, and the message they send to us, and what they say to us on the media, we feel ashamed from their determination and their faith. The message yesterday, today, and before yesterday also was in the martyrs, the funeral processions of the martyrs in all of the villages, and also the slogans chanted by those who participate in the funeral processions. These are the support. This is a response from the supporters, and also the response from the country, the solidarity and the sympathies which were expressed. If they expect that by committing this massacre and this crime, that this will lead to more divisions or more abandonment at the national level, what happened is the opposite. One of the goals also was to strike the structure of the resistance. Naturally, they assume that a lot of these explosions, the pagers or the wireless radios, are carried by leading officials in the resistance. Of course, that was not true, because they carry old pagers. The new ones went elsewhere. In any case, they wanted to kill the largest number of commanders, officials, to shake the structure, to strike the command and control, and hence for there to be a state of panic and weakness in the structure of Hezbollah and the resistance. And this didn't happen. I tell you, it didn't happen at one moment. From the start, the command and control, the following up of the situation in detail, was happening, and the declaring of readiness on the battlefront, the readiness of all of the weapons and the forces, because there was also the possibility that a kind of Israeli attack could take place. So it was our duty to take the precautionary measures. In any case, today, I assure you that this structure was not shaken. And I'll go even further. Thank God Almighty, due to the accumulation of the efforts and the blessings of the blood of the martyrs and the sacrifices of the mujahideen and the wounded and the leaders at all levels and the cadres, ever since 1982 until today, this structure is strong, firm in number, and also is cohesive, whereby such a major crime cannot shake it. Rest assured, to all of the friends, all of those in the world who were concerned, because it's their right to be concerned, because what happened was a major event. I tell you, based on knowledge and responsibility, our structure, thank God, is strong, firm, cohesive, and we have big capabilities and a high level of readiness, and let the enemy know that what happened did not damage our structure, our will, our determination, our cohesion, our capability, nor the command and control structure, nor our readiness, nor our presence on the battlefield. It will only increase our strength and firmness and presence. Rest assured in this regard. This is regarding the obstruction of the goals. If the goal is to separate the fronts, don't even dream about it. If the goal is to shake the supporters, don't dream about it. Up until now, they're stupid. And there are people over there who said that it's true that technologically wise, they are very smart, but in what they did, they revealed to the whole world that they're very stupid, because they can't achieve their goals. Until now, they don't understand the moral, cultural, and faithful depth of these supporters and resistance and these people. Also, at the national level and the structure of the resistance. Now, in the final part, which is a completion, over the past few weeks, we started to hear about the North. Of course, regarding the response, I'll speak about that at the end. We heard about transferring the focus to the North, the Northern Front, the war in the North. Of course, there is a disparity in what is being said. Some speak about military escalation, some speak about a near war, some days of fighting, some people exaggerate and say full-scale war. Now, I don't want to analyze this. Anyway, there's no need. The days will reveal these truths. However, everything they're saying in the North, they set a goal. We always say it's important to follow the goal and to thwart the goal and to defeat the enemy and to make the enemy fail by preventing him from achieving his goal. That is the battle. That is how the resistance wages its battles throughout history. The resistance of the peoples. So what is the goal which was declared by the enemy's government? And based upon that, Netanyahu and Gallant gave the mandate to the Northern Front to return, according to their expressions, return to the inhabitants of the North, to the North safely. That is the goal. And they added it to the war aims. So there were three war aims which were declared, which were related to Gaza. Now there's a fourth goal, which is to return the inhabitants. What we call it is to return the occupied settlers of northern occupied Palestine to the border region with South Lebanon. That is the goal. Now, can you achieve this goal? You, Netanyahu. Yesterday, he seemed a bit happy. Okay, you, Gallant, and all of your army, government, and your entity, herein lies the challenge. We accepted this challenge since October 8, and today we also accept the challenge. And to Netanyahu, and to Gallant, and to the enemy's army, and to the enemy's entity, I say, you won't be able to return the inhabitants of the North to the North. You won't be able to return the occupying usurper settlers to the settlements in the North. Do what you want. You won't be able. This is a challenge, a big challenge between us. The only way, I said this on October 8, now we're approaching the end of 1 year. I repeat once again, the only way is to put an end to the aggression and the war on the people of Gaza and on the Gaza Strip, and of course on the West Bank. That's the only way. Otherwise, nothing. Neither military escalation, nor killing, nor assassinations, nor a full-scale war. can return the inhabitants to the border. No way, God willing. On the contrary, what you'll do will increase the displacement of the inhabitants in the north. It will further decrease the possibility of the safe return of these people. You know this. I don't want to escalate in the rhetoric. It's been 11 months. We're still fighting at a certain level. So that's also our commitment. There's something else which we have to say clearly. This stupid commander of the north, he's suggesting establishing a security zone inside Lebanese territories. First of all, we wish that they enter Lebanese territories. We wish this. Do you know why? Because on the border, in their positions, they're in heavily fortified positions. Rarely do we see tanks. Now, as soon as a tank came out, the resistance fighters attacked it. They have put in place measures over the course of 11 months, hiding, moving about, and we're looking for a soldier and a tank. We're looking for any sign, day and night. And we need daily intelligence efforts, daily intelligence efforts to identify the whereabouts of those targets. But when they come, welcome. What they consider to be a threat, we consider to be an opportunity. We consider it to be a historic opportunity. We even wish it would happen. Because, of course, it will have a major impact on this battle. This is in principle. Second, what is it they're saying? They want to establish a security belt, and they think that if they do this, they can return the settlers and they can live in peace. And they're mistaken. They're comparing to the experience of 1978 when they established a security zone in the south, and then they expanded it in 1982 until the year 2000. The well-known security belt or zone, which we called back then the occupied border area. So here they're mistaken. They've miscalculated. What is the mistake? In 1978, the resistance which existed before 1982 and after 1982, the resistance which continued and also emerged, which continued, was present, or which emerged, Hezbollah, after 1982, all of the resistance factions, Hezbollah, the Amal movement, the national resistance movements from the various political parties, the Islamic resistance factions back then, we had the Jama'a Islamiyya, the Harakat Tawheed, they were all part of the Islamic resistance movement. We, as Lebanese, our operations and our fighting would be in Lebanese territories because the aim was to occupy to liberate the Lebanese occupied region. So from 1982 to year 2000, we didn't carry out any operations in occupied Palestine. The focus of all of the Lebanese resistance actions was on the border area to exhaust the enemy's army and the enemy's agents in order to force them to leave our land. Yes, after 1992, there was an equation. The settlements would be targeted when the civilians in the south would be targeted. And this was expressed in the July understanding in 1993, the April understanding in 1996. Otherwise, there was no such thing, no such goal as operations in northern occupied Palestine. Today's situation is different. You're mistaken. If you think that if you come and establish a security zone, the resistance will be preoccupied, if you can, that they'll focus on the fighting in the security zone and will focus its operations only in that security zone, no. If you come into the security zone, the attacks on the military positions, the military barracks, the military bases, and also the settlements in response to the attacks on civilians in northern occupied Palestine, rather they will expand. This security zone will become a trap and an ambush and an abyss and hell for your army. If you wish to come to our land, if you wish to come to our territories, and you will find yourself up against hundreds of those who were wounded on Tuesday and Wednesday, because these people today are more determined to continue with resistance against you and to fight you and to exhaust you. So there's a mistake. You're making a mistake, and you can try. In any case, finally, there is no doubt that the aggression which took place is a major aggression, and as I said during the speech, it's unprecedented, and it will be met with a firm accountability and a just punishment from where they expect and from where they don't expect. However, because this battle, this new battle, was hidden, let me today change the means. I won't speak about time or how or a place or time. Leave it. And you'll see, not what you hear, you'll see it. The accountability will come. The scale, where, how, we will keep this to ourselves. And even amongst a very, very small group within ourselves, because here we are in a battle which is very delicate and deep and sensitive and important, the most important. In conclusion, once again, I pray to God Almighty to have mercy and to grant the martyrs the highest levels, and to the families of the martyrs, I pray that God gives you endurance and satisfaction, and for God Almighty to accept from you these martyrs and their sacrifices and their stances. I pray to God Almighty that He grant a speedy recovery to all of the wounded and to grant them good health so that they could return to their families and to their battlefields and the jihadi squares. And I pray to God Almighty that He makes all the hearts of the Lebanese people who are expressing solidarity and sympathy, those who are standing firm, that He makes their hearts strong, and to preserve this positive atmosphere which prevailed as a blessing from these martyrs. And for some silly people, whether it be politicians or media personnel or in social media, I pray that they don't wreck this great national human ethical scene, because Lebanon is in dire need of this stance and this unity. And in taking this stance against the enemy, this is one of the elements of strength which makes the enemy hesitate in continuing to attack Lebanon or in its war against Lebanon. I pray to God Almighty to establish and to also help our people in Gaza, West Bank, in occupied Palestine, who are subject every day to bombardment, to massacres, to genocide in front of the whole world. And also to help all those who support and all those who fight and all the fighters, resistance fighters, on all of the fronts of the axis of resistance, and for all of them to be certain that the end of this battle will be a historic major victory from God. Netanyahu, Gallant, Ben Gafir, Smotrich, they are leading their entity to the abyss. They are leading their entity to the third destruction, according to their terminologies. This stupid, rash, greedy, narcissist leadership, which focuses on its own personal ambitions, this will lead this entity to the abyss. And here, regarding the future of this battle, I say the days, nights, weeks, and months, it might be years. This is a long, large-scale battle against this entity. However, its horizon and its end is clear. The Mujahideen, the faithful, those who are putting up with the hardships, the wounded, they bear witness to this, and the martyrs also bear witness to this. And may peace be upon you all.
We're live there in the Lebanese.
Welcome back, dear listeners. What you heard was the live coverage of the speech delivered by Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. During this speech, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah said, Israel's device explosions show the depth of the criminality of the Zionist regime. Hezbollah leader said Israel attempts to kill 5,000 humans in just 1 minute by device explosions. He said the Israeli attack was a major terrorist operation and an act of genocide and massacre. Hezbollah leader said Israel's fresh atrocities makes it harder for settlers to return to homes. Nasrallah said they will jump at opportunity to hit Zionists if they implement plan to create security belt. Hezbollah leader said massive efforts by people and medics helped ease sufferings of the injured. Nasrallah said they formed multiple committees to probe device explosions. Hezbollah leader said Israeli attack crossed all red lines and amounts to declaration of war. Hezbollah leader said they obtained strategic achievement through serial anti-Israel operations. He said Israel admitted suffering historical defeat in the north. Hezbollah leader said their war of attrition on Zionists brought strategic achievement. Hezbollah leader said to Netanyahu, "We won't stop anti-Israel operations before you stop the genocide." Hezbollah leader said resistance can't back down in the face of Israeli savageries. He said despite all the sacrifices and the consequences, resistance will not abandon embattled Palestinians. Hezbollah leader said Israel's fresh atrocities makes it harder for settlers to return to their homes. Well, dear listeners, we now go back to the normal course of our programs. Many thanks for being with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. What you just heard was our special coverage. We now return to our normal course of programs. In the limelight.
The suspect in the second apparent assassination attempt of Donald Trump in as many months was charged in a federal court on Monday, 16th of September, with two gun-related crimes, as an urgent investigation began into how he was able to get so close to the former president. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Demands were mounting on Sunday, 15th of September, for Donald Trump to receive protections on a level with the sitting president after a would-be assassin was narrowly foiled from carrying out what the FBI is investigating as an attempt on the life of the Republican nominee, the second attempt on his life in as many months. U.S. President Joe Biden on Monday, 16th of September, said he believed the Secret Service, which was being plagued by staff shortages, needed more resources. President Biden said, "One thing I want to make clear is the Secret Service needs more help. I think Congress should respond to their needs," adding, "I think they need some more personnel." Biden's comments came as an internal report into the operational failures that preceded the earlier assassination attempt against Trump in July is expected to detail lapses in communication between the former president's protective detail and local law enforcement charged with securing the perimeter around the political rallies. A suspect, Ryan Wesley Ruth, 58 years old, a pro-Ukraine activist from Hawaii who is registered to vote in North Carolina, was detained after a Secret Service agent spotted the barrel of an AK-47-style rifle poking out through a chain-link fence on the outskirts of Trump International Golf Club in West Palm Beach, Florida. The former president is estimated to have been 300 to 500 yards away when a Secret Service agent saw the suspect and fired at him. The suspect fled the scene and was later arrested speeding north from Palm Beach in his car. Republicans were the first to call for additional security, which has already been improved since Donald Trump was targeted at a rally in Butler, Pennsylvania, by Thomas Matthew Crooks, who was killed by a Secret Service sniper. The 20-year-old Crooks, in the earlier case, whose motives appear to be opportunistic, shot the president in the ear, whilst killing one bystander and wounding two others. The former White House press secretary, Ari Fleischer, said the Secret Service should change its policy and treat Donald Trump like he's an incumbent president with a larger protective perimeter around him. Ari Fleischer said, "Stop being bureaucratic, do what is necessary." In a statement on Sunday, 15th of September, President Biden said he had ordered the federal government to continue ensuring the Secret Service has every resource, capability, and protective measure necessary to ensure the former president's continued safety. But President Biden's statement did little to quell demands for more protections for Donald Trump as he runs against Kamala Harris in the 5th of November election. The New York Republican Congresswoman Claudia Tenney said it was inexplicable that there had been a second assassination attempt against Trump. Claudia Tenney said President Trump needs the same, if not more, Secret Service protection than a sitting president. The U.S. House Majority Leader Steve Scalise, a Louisiana Republican, said that the Secret Service must up their level of protection for Donald Trump to full capabilities, including expanding the perimeter. The congressman, Nick Langworthy, another New York Republican, said, "Recurring political violence targeting Donald Trump is unacceptable and deeply un-American." Nick Langworthy said, "This is not who we are as a nation, and it cannot be tolerated under any circumstances." Such reactions largely came after a West Palm Beach sheriff, Rick Bradshaw, whose jurisdiction includes Donald Trump's golf course, said security would have been tighter if the former president was in office. But the debate over what level of security Donald Trump should receive has clashed with protocol and demands on the Secret Service's $3 billion budget. About $1.2 billion is allocated to protective services for the sitting president and his family. But where the sitting president's detail is supported by the military, Donald Trump is assigned a far lighter detail tasked to work with local law enforcement. The national broadcaster NBC News has also covered the same story. Before the Butler, Pennsylvania shooting, the U.S. Secret Service repeatedly denied requests for additional resources and personnel sought by Donald Trump's security detail. Denials of those requests often cited staff shortages, leading to tensions between Trump advisers and the agency. An internal Secret Service investigation reportedly showed failures of communication between the Secret Service and local law enforcement about closing off lines of sight contributed to Trump's vulnerability in Butler, Pennsylvania. After that assassination attempt, security around Donald Trump was said to have increased. The Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas in July said his agency, which includes the Secret Service, was beefing up protection for Donald Trump. Alejandro Mayorkas said at a White House briefing, the Secret Service enhanced former President Trump's protection based on evolving nature of threats to the former president. But Donald Trump's frequent golf games have long been viewed as challenging because golf courses are open areas and often close to roads. He owns golf courses in Florida, New York, New Jersey, and Scotland, as well as numerous other locations. During Ryan Wesley Ruth's hearing on Monday, 16th of September, authorities did not immediately charge the suspect with attempting to assassinate Trump. Instead, they charged him with possessing a firearm despite having prior felony conviction prohibiting him from legally doing so, as well as with illicitly having a gun with an obliterated serial number. The first of these charges stemmed from Ryan Ruth having been convicted in Greensboro, North Carolina, in 2002 of illegally possessing what a media report referred to at the time as a fully automatic machine gun. According to reports, in that instance, Ryan Ruth barricaded himself at his roofing company during a three-hour standoff before he led police on a car chase and ultimately surrendered to the police. A second felony conviction mentioned in Monday's criminal complaint against Ryan Ruth was for multiple counts of possession of stolen goods. The complaint does not address what may have motivated Ruth to stick the barrel of a rifle into Donald Trump's golf course while the Republican presidential nominee played there. Ryan Ruth's son, Oren, said that Ukraine's cause in its war against Russia was dear to him. Donald Trump recently declined to answer a question at a television debate about whether he wanted Ukraine to win the war, renewing fears that he might suspend American military aid to Ukraine if he becomes president. Donald Trump also successfully lobbied lawmakers who are loyal to him to delay authorizing additional military support and aid to Ukraine for months earlier this year. Ryan Ruth's hearing lasted 8 minutes and saw federal prosecutors announce the initial charges against him. He could face up to 15 years in prison if convicted of possessing a firearm as a felon and 5 years in prison in connection with the other charge.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed, smiling he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program. And our guest speaker, as always, Sheikh Javid. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the studio again.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Well, we started discussing some of the jurisprudential laws related to tayammum based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei from the last episode onwards, and we like to actually continue along the same line. And I like to ask you this question at the beginning of this episode, Sheikh Javid, if you don't mind. In tayammum, is it necessary to wipe our forehead by the palms? Because normally in tayammum we have to actually touch our forehead. Right?
Yes.
And a part of our face.
Sure.
And then the back of our hands, right?
Yes.
But is it necessary for those parts actually to be clear, first of all, like by wiping our forehead or the palms by the palm of our hand, by the palm of our hands, or is it valid just if you do so by the fingers?
That's a good question. First of all, if you are wearing rings, okay, remove the rings because it forms a barrier.
Right.
Then in tayammum, of course, wiping should be done by the inner surface of the palm of the hands, okay?
Yes.
From the wrists, okay, to the tip of the fingers.
Yes.
Okay. And first of all, you have to wipe the forehead. And it's both sides from the hairline to including the eyebrows, of course, by both hands, okay?
What about the eyelids?
The eyelids, of course, the eyelids should also be included, okay?
So we normally close our eyes basically covering our eyes with the full eyelids.
But it's not very necessary to be particular, okay? Uh-huh. Okay, when you pull down with the palms of your hand from the hairline and down to the tip of the nose, it means that the eyebrows and also the eyelids are included.
Yes.
Okay.
That up until the tip of the nose.
Right? Yeah, until the tip of the nose, of course. So we will further, inshallah, in the following episodes, discuss the method and the rules.
Parts that should be covered.
We will shed light on some of the ambiguities inshallah. That may be there with the audience.
Yes.
Then you need to move the palm of your left hand on the back of the right hand and the palm of your right hand on the back of the left hand. And this is the procedure, but of course. And His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei has said that as an obligatory precaution, you need to hit your hands on the ground. Hit. It's not just placing your hand on the ground, okay?
Uh-huh.
You need to hit it the palms of your hand on the ground and move the palm of your left hand on the back of the right hand and then the palm of your right hand. This means that the obligatory precaution is that you hit the ground twice, once for your forehead and then the next time for the back of the hands, the right and the left hands.
So twice, not three times.
But His Eminence has exercised obligatory precaution, means ihtiyati wajib, okay?
Yes.
For the second time, His Eminence has exercised ihtiyati wajib, which means obligatory precaution.
I see.
So His Eminence has also said that otherwise the tayammum is not valid and you should say the prayers performed after the invalid tayammum. When the tayammum is believed to be invalid, you need to, of course...
So only you said by the palm of the hands, not the fingers.
Not the fingers. That's the answer to your question because you just said fingers are sufficient or no. His Eminence has said that you need to use the inner side of your palms.
I see. Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Let's take a short break and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, yeah, Allah. Guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws, on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Sobid, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to tayammum based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Sheikh Sobid, what's the rule of prayer said after performing tayammum, or wiping the forehead, and the back of the hands?
I don't know what you exactly mean when it comes to tayammum. Of course, tayammum remains valid as long as one of the invalidating agents occurs. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yes.
Like, for example, when you do tayammum, it's just like you have made wudu. As long as you, for example, none of the invalidating agents has occurred, the tayammum remains to be valid, and you can continue praying with the same tayammum for hours and for many, for example, days if you do not cause, if nothing happens to invalidate the tayammum. For example, if you don't go to bathroom, or if you don't, have ejaculation of semen or something, then tayammum holds, and it's still valid for performing performing prayers.
Mm-hmm, I see. Okay, in performing tayammum, on which tayammum is valid, such as soil, plaster of Paris, stone and rock, is it all right, Sheikh Jabi, to perform it, to do it when they are fixed on a wall, or they should be on the ground?
That's also a good question. Well, it's not a condition for the validity of tayammum that they be on the ground. They can be anywhere, on the wall or on the on the ground, wherever it is possible for you to perform tayammum. It is okay, and it makes no difference.
Mm-hmm. What about marble? Is that actually included in one of the things that tayammum can be performed on?
Well, His Eminence has said that you can perform tayammum on rocks, okay, uh-huh. On rock. So marble is also primarily, it is rock, and it can be performed, can be done on it, especially when there is dust settled on it. There is no problem. It's okay. It's quite good to perform tayammum on the dust settled on. But okay, marble is also sufficient according to His Eminence. Also, I said that, okay, it is something, it's an issue that has been disputed by other religious scholars, but His Eminence says that it's okay to perform tayammum on marble as well.
Is there any dispute regarding the Plaster of Paris too?
Of course, it's okay. It is permissible to do tayammum on a plaster of Paris because it's part of the surface of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when it comes from the earth, you can do tayammum on it. It makes no difference what it is. For example, whether it's plaster of Paris or lime.
But what about
or
lime?
Stones.
Because yeah. You said in one of the earlier programs that lime is not.
No, I said that as long as you have
soil.
Earth,
yes.
Soil, it's always better. It's always recommended to perform, tayammum on the soil rather than on the lime.
Mm-hmm. What about wood?
Well, wood is not included in the things which are allowable for them. Of course, you can do sajda on it, but I've not seen anywhere in any of the books written by the religious authorities to allow a piece of wood for sajda, for tayammum, sorry.
I see. Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Let's take a short break, and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Don't go away. Back to the program, Islamic Laws, on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Jawad, our guest speaker. We are still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to tayammum based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. One becomes junub after ejaculation, and there is no access to the bath, or the state of janaba remains for several days, Sheikh Jawad, right?
Yes.
Then, if the individual prayed with tayammum instead of ghusl,
yes.
And thereafter, a wudu invalidator happened.
Yes.
Is this individual obliged to perform again, tayammum instead of ghusl, for the later prayers? Or is the first tayammum enough for janaba, and it is obligatory to do wudu or tayammum for the following prayers due to the occurrence of wudu invalidator?
Well, of course, when a person enters the state of janaba, and I'm sure our audience and listeners understand what janaba means. Janaba is the ritual impurity that occurs when someone ejaculates semen or when someone has sexual intercourse. So that's that person is considered to be in the state of janaba. So we use the term junub to qualify such a person. When a junub person performs a valid tayammum as a substitute for ghusl al-janaba and a wuzu invalidator occurs later, then as long as the excuse of performing tayammum instead of ghusl is existing, it is it's of obligatory precaution for him to perform tayammum in a state of ghusl for every act that requires being in a state of purity, and then do wudu as well. This is the opinion of His Eminence, Grand Ayatollah Khamenei. But as far as I know, certain scholars like Ayatollah Sistani says that, of course, the tayammum which is performed instead of ghusl remains valid. Only one has to make wudu for tayammum instead make wudu, and if there is no water to make wudu, then he has to perform tayammum instead of wudu only, and his tayammum which he performed instead of ghusl remains valid. But His Eminence says that as a measure of precaution, okay, this is an issue of ihtiyat.
Yes.
It's a measure of precaution. His Eminence says that he has to perform tayammum for ghusl as well, and then also make tayammum, another tayammum, or maybe make wudu for the prayer. Okay, mm-hmm. If there is no water to make wudu, then another tayammum is required for wudu.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an issue of ihtiyat. Of course, in such cases where a religious authority exercises ihtiyat or precaution, one is allowed to refer to another mujtahid.
I see. Thank you very much, Echavi. And thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to your own program, Islamic Laws, on IRIB English Radio, in which we try to deal with some of the jurisprudential laws related to tayammum based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم من جاء إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
More civilians are killed in Israel's artillery fire and airstrikes across the Gaza Strip amid worsening humanitarian crisis in the blockaded territory. And Iran's president calls for unity among Muslims, saying Israel dares to commit crimes against Palestinians only due to divisions among Muslim nations. Hello everyone and welcome to World News. Now Lebanese people have held mass funerals in Beirut for victims of Israel's terrorist attacks. According to the Lebanese health minister, 37 people were killed in 2 days of Israeli terror attacks. Nearly 3,000 others were also injured. Lebanon's prime minister meanwhile has called for the UN to oppose what he described Israel's technical war on his country ahead of a UN Security Council meeting on the attacks. Najib Mikati urged a Security Council to take a firm stance to stop Israel's aggression against Lebanon. Attacks have set off strong reactions from Hezbollah, with head of the resistance movement's executive council, Sheikh Hashem Safaidine, vowing a very strong response to the Israeli terrorism. On Tuesday, thousands of pagers exploded over the course of an hour across Lebanon, and then a day later, more wireless devices, including walkie-talkies, mobile phones, and laptops, also exploded. Writer and political analyst Ali Risk joined us earlier from Beirut to share his thoughts on Israel's cyber attacks across Lebanon.
People were anticipating maybe the traditional military escalation, possibly Israeli bombardment. I don't think anyone was expecting something like this to happen. targeting pagers, targeting the wireless walkie-talkies as well. So this is a new Israeli method. It's a new kind of technological or security warfare, if you would like. And it might possibly be the case that Israel preferred this method because the other method was too risky, meaning the all-out military war. Everyone has been warning of the repercussions and how Hezbollah could rain missiles against Israel should Israel